It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Bill Hemmer. This is Hemmer Time. How strong is the underlying U.S. economy? In many ways, that answer will shape Joe Biden's presidency. And this week, I spoke with Mark Zandi. He's been an optimist on Biden's plans and his economic team. So where does he see trouble ahead? That's where we begin this week's conversation. Mark Zandi, a real pleasure, chief economist for Moody's Analytics, and welcome to the program today.
Thanks, Bill. It's good to be with you.
I have 100 topics for you. Let's see how many we can get through over the next 20 minutes or so, because my sense, and this is your field, but my sense is the ground seems to be shifting in a way beneath us. And I really don't know how much anyone knows when it comes to understanding it. Start at the macro level, 35,000 feet. How do you see the economy?
I'm optimistic, Bill. I feel very good about where the economy is headed. So just to give you some numbers, I think over the next year, we're going to create 6-7 million jobs. Unemployment, which today is just over 6%, will be closing in on 4%. There's just a lot of tailwinds behind this economy. So I'm quite confident about the direction we're headed. I feel very good about things.
The tailwinds, is it more than government spending out of Washington?
Yeah, we're reopening. The pandemic is winding down. There's adjustment issues as all these businesses open up all at once and want to rehire all at once. So there's a bit of trying to fill all the chairs problem, but we'll work through those because there's a lot of money to be made, and that's driving a lot of growth. Also, there's just a lot of pent-up demand. You know, people have been sheltering in place, or at least many people haven't been traveling, going to restaurants, ball games, getting their hair cut, and they have saved a lot of money. So you mix a lot of pent-up demand with a lot of excess cash, and that's a magical elixir and is going to drive a lot of spending. Consumer spending over the next year.
So let me take
And of course, the fiscal policy is also an issue. It is also a support as well. But those are two big tailwinds.
Let me take the other side of that. A few days ago, we had this inflation report, consumer price index, which shot up more than anybody thought. I think it was the highest reading or the highest jump since 1982, which is phenomenal to me. I mean, a lot of people listening to this probably never lived through inflationary years because we haven't had it for 40 years. But prices are going up, gasoline and lumber and corn and automobiles. So what am I missing, Mark?
Not a surprise, right? I mean, a big part of that jump in consumer prices was airlines normalizing fares, rental car companies putting their prices back to where they were pre-pandemic. Used car prices are up because people weren't buying new cars last year, so there's fewer off-lease cars this year. A big part of what we're observing is just getting back to normal, just resetting things after a very difficult year. And, you know, if my diagnosis is correct, then these jumps in prices that we're observing right now will be temporary as we work through these issues. And by the summer, probably, it's no later than the fall, prices will settle back down and consumer prices will be growing about the pace they were, prior to the pandemic. Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's shooting out of nowhere. Your approach is very calm to this, which I think is a reassuring attitude to have. I don't know how many trillions of dollars they print in Washington or how many more programs they pass, but I mean, there was an incredible story this past week. California came out and said, we've got $76 billion in surplus. And yet I think Washington's going to give California another $40 billion. I mean, you could argue they don't need it. And if they don't, what are the moral hazards of the policies that you might see at the moment?
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. You're right. The American Rescue Plan, that's the package that was passed, the $1.9 trillion package passed back in March, at $350 billion for state and local government, and they probably don't need that. Right? At least half the states have surpluses. The other half don't, and 10, 12 have big deficits. But, you know, $350 billion is a lot of money. I don't think there's a moral hazard involved there. What I think will probably happen is that excess cash will probably go into infrastructure, the, you know, one-off kinds of projects that states need to do. And, you know, I think it'll ultimately end up in a reasonably good place. I don't think it's going to, it'll incent state and local governments to do, behave bad fiscally and sign on to programs that they're going to have to pay for a long run. Maybe some states will do that, but I think that'll be more the exception than the rule.
You sound bullish, and I know you're not a stock picker, but every year more and more Americans have money in the market, and it's been flying high. And this week it showed, at least for a while, it's got gravity after all. Where do you think that's heading?
Well, the stock market has discounted all my optimism and then some, right? So it's gone skyward. I mean, it's just been straight up since the bottom back a year ago. I think the bottom was late March 2020, and it's been literally straight up. So investors are discounting my optimism. I don't think there's much more room to run on the upside, particularly as interest rates continue to rise and get back to something more typical. You know, they've been extraordinarily low, and that helps to support stock prices. We can talk about why, but that's a key to the high stock market and high valuations. Mm-hmm. So as interest rates start to normalize, as the economy gets back to, you know, pre-pandemic levels, then the stock market is going to have to adjust too. So if you told me stock market a year from now is about where it is today, I don't think I'd argue with you.
Wow. Okay. So it's flat over the next 12 months, possibly.
Yeah, well, of course, the stock market goes up, down, and all around, right? So, there's going to be a lot of big swings here, and we've observed a bit of that over the last couple of days. But yeah, if you look through that volatility a year from now, if you told me the S&P 500 was at, 4,100, which is where it is today, I'd say, yeah, that sounds about right. Mm.
What is the real deal on real estate? And people are moving a lot. A lot of that's a big part of COVID. Homes in certain parts of the country are doubling in price. You look at Florida and the amount of growth down there. It's been reported that inventory is slim across the country. What do you think's happening in that sector?
Yeah, well, key to all of it is the low interest rates, the low mortgage rates. I mean, you know, you go back a few months ago, the 30-year fixed rate mortgage was going for 2.75%. I mean, that's just like incredibly low. Even now, it's up a little bit, but, you know, we're around 3, which is incredibly low. So people say, hey, you know, if it's free money, why wouldn't I do that? Particularly for given the work from anywhere dynamic and people wanting, you know, to live outside of big cities, at least temporarily. The other thing, Bill, that's going on is there's a very severe shortage of housing, affordable housing. Home builders have not been able to keep up with just the growth in the population and households. And so we have a very severe shortage, particularly kind of at the lower and lower mid-price points, kind of the affordable part of the market. And so that puts a, no pun intended, you know, kind of a floor under prices and helps to propel the kind of growth we've been seeing. And then finally, you know, take like any market, asset market, like a stock market, you know, the housing market's taking on a life of its own. So, you know, people see prices rising and they say, hey, this is a good investment. I mean, I can't make any money on my checking account. I'm fully invested in stock. And do I really want to invest more in that given what's going on there? So they see housing as a good, you know, alternative investment. And, you know, in the long run, they're probably right.
Hmm. What about office space? If you were to come to Midtown Manhattan, or if you were to go up any of the avenues here in New York, the signs are out. The space is empty. Retail space for lease. You've got all these high-rise buildings in Midtown Manhattan and Lower Manhattan. Mark, there hasn't been anyone in them in 13, 14, 15 months. What's the future for that?
Yeah, office, I think, is one of the casualties. Office space demand, you know, the office market is a casualty of the pandemic, that the work from anywhere phenomena is real. It's, you know, there'll be some swinging back. People as offices reopen, as New York reopens over the next couple of weeks, office buildings welcome people back. There'll be some swinging back, but there's no going back. You know, the percent of the workforce that's going to be working from home on a consistent basis is going to be a lot higher going forward than it was pre-pandemic. And that means just less demand for office space, particularly in big urban areas like New York and Chicago, San Francisco, LA, you know, Houston, maybe Miami. So those big markets, I think they've got some adjusting to do, you know, going forward.
So, there's an adjustment on that. There's probably a financial effect that comes from that. Can you tell us what that is?
Well, you know, there are mortgages on those office buildings. So, you know, if office absorption is down, as vacancies high, rents weaken, the owners of those properties can't make their payments on their mortgages. So we'll probably see some office buildings default on their mortgages. And so there'll be some, you know, ripple effects of that. But, you know, Bill, in the grand scheme of things, you know, this is, you know, one small part of the economy. I don't think this is a major headwind.
Interesting. Do you see significant bankruptcies coming from this? Because here's the way I see it is the landlords will start renegotiating their leases with those who want to do work there. And in all likelihood, at a lower price, at least in the near term. And perhaps, you know, the silver lining in this is that if you're a business owner and you've been trying to get into a high-rated market like San Francisco, like LA, like New York City, this might be your opportunity, which could create opportunity for those who've been waiting to get into the market.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, there's we have to get from here to there, though. So, you know, the next thing that happens is rents got to come down. And prices for those office properties have to come down. And so there's some, you know, pain and suffering, financial pain and suffering for the people who own those properties, you know. But you're right. Once that process is over a year or two from now, when rents are down, then you know, markets will adjust, right? You'll see people say, hey, you know, downtown Manhattan looks pretty attractive. Or I can go to the middle of San Francisco in the financial district. And I couldn't afford that at whatever square feet it was, you know, prior to the pandemic, but now I can. So those markets will adjust. It's just, you know, it'll be a little bit painful here over the next couple, 3 years.
And to be clear, you describe this as a small part of the overall economy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're even going to see this show up. You know, there'll be some problems in parts of the financial, you know, commercial mortgage-backed securities market. Some smaller banks that have extended loans that go bad may have a problem, but yeah, no, I really don't see this as a macroeconomic issue. It's a local issue. It's a problem for part of the financial system, but
wow.
It's not going to have a big ripple effect.
I really applaud your optimism. I guess I'm going to go out and buy today. Stand by, Mark, because I'm a child of the '80s. When I see the I word, I run scared. When our conversation continues here on Hemmer Time.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with Mark Zandi, Chief Economist, Moody's Analytics. Mark, I can remember 1981, 1982. When things were not good, prices were through the roof on just about everything. Inflation was crushing this economy. And it's really tough to get out of that once you find yourself in it. Do you think we are headed that way or can we prevent it?
No, Bill, we're not heading. Hey, look, I mean, before the pandemic hit, even during the pandemic, what has been our biggest problem for the last 25 years? It's not inflation being too high. It's inflation being too low. I mean, the Federal Reserve has been working really, really hard keeping interest rates low to try to get inflation up. So some acceleration in inflation is a feature, not a bug. I mean, core underlying inflation for the last 25 years has been 1.75% per annum. The Fed's target is 2%. And the Fed's telling us we want something above 2%. And we can go into the logic as to why, but it makes perfect sense. So going from below 2% to above 2%, that's what we're in the middle of. And you just got to keep that in mind. I understand, you know, when you're in the middle of that process, which is what we're in the middle of now, it feels a little uncomfortable. You see what's happened over the last few months. You start forecasting that that's going to continue forever, and we're going to get into the situation that we were in the late 70s and early 80s. That is not at all likely. I suppose I could construct a scenario how we would get there, but I'd be very stretched, and it's a very low probability.
Mark, if you had a pile of money, how would you protect that against inflation?
Well, I mean, the real estate's a single family. First of all, it depends on who you are, your risk tolerance, how old you are, what your investment horizon is. But, I think in general, you should have a diversified set of investments, a big set of investments in stocks, real estate, fixed income if you're a little bit older and like me and, approaching, retirement. Certainly a cash cushion. I don't think you need to do anything extraordinary here. I guess my message is inflation is picking up, but it's picking up from, incredibly low levels, and it's not going to get to a place where you're going to feel uncomfortable about mm-hmm. it, at least not on a consistent basis. You may have to pay more than $3 a gallon for gasoline over the next 6 months as, oil markets kind of figure it out. And yes, you might have to pay, more for, a washing machine or, laundry detergent, that kind of thing, because there's supply issues, because of the global supply chains kind of iron themselves out. But these are small things and not long-term things. So I don't think I would put concerns about inflation certainly not at the top of the list of things I'm thinking about when I'm trying to think about how should I save.
Fair point. When you think about the unemployment benefits going through the 6th of September, I don't know if you think it's a good idea or not, but with the jobs report, it would suggest that at least in part, if not a major part, of the reason why these jobs are not filled is because you can make more money by staying home and collecting unemployment through the federal government and at the local level through your own state. How much credit do you give that possibility?
I think it's playing a role, but I think it's playing a small role. If I were king for the day, I would not have extended the supplemental UI, the $300 a week supplement that you're talking about through September, which is what it's going through to now. If I were king, I probably would have tied it to unemployment. So as unemployment comes down in states, then that supplemental UI would go. Administering that, operationally might be a little bit difficult, but that's kind of if I were king, that's what I would have done. Mm-hmm. But if you look at and I know there's a lot of anecdotes out there, and I know there's a lot of business people that feel that this is a big deal. And I'm sure in some parts of the country and in some industries it is, but, as a macro economist looking at the data, it's very difficult to come to the conclusion that that's a big deal. The bigger deal, Bill, in terms of getting people, finding people, is schools aren't open, and you've got, a lot of parents, moms and dads that are at home that, stepped out of the workforce when the pandemic hit because they had to take care of their kids who had to go online. And the real key here is getting those schools reopened so that those folks can go back to work. That's the bigger deal. That's where you have millions and millions of people that aren't working, that want to be working and should be working.
Did you see the interview with Jamie Dimon, Wall Street Journal, about a week ago, head of J.P. Morgan?
I didn't see the interview, no.
It was in print. He said this. He said, our government, when they point out the issues that we should do better, they're right. But if we just throw a lot of money at it and it's all wasted again, we will be in big trouble. And then he talked about the can-do nation became the nation of red tape. I don't know I don't have a good sense about where you think the Fed is right now, whether or not they should start bumping up these interest rates by a quarter point here, another quarter point there. Would you expect that? Or do you think they're riding this right, so to speak, now?
So far, so good. Roadmap is, let's get back to full employment. Let's get an unemployment rate that's back down below 4%. Let's get labor force participation back. Let's get, all those people who stepped out of the workforce back in. And let's get inflation up. We want it above 2. We don't want it below 2, lots of reasons for that. And once we achieve that bogey, those goals, then, we'll start raising interest rates. So I think that's reasonable. Now it becomes a debate as to, what's full employment? Are we there yet? Is inflation high enough? Is it persistent enough? Are we there yet? And, once that debate's been resolved, then, start raising short-term interest rates. Mm. Now the Fed is saying, that's not all that what I described. We're not going to hit those objectives until 2024. I doubt that. If you told me late 22 or 23, given all the everything that's going on here, that sounds more reasonable to me, more likely. But, I think they've got the right objectives and I think they've got the right strategy. So I think, they're on the right path here.
Well, two more questions.
Yeah.
In college, I got one C. I received one C in 4 years and it was economics. Good thing I took it pass fail, so it didn't show up on the how do you get interested in economics? What was it for you?
Oh my gosh, from the beginning of time, Bill. Some things you're not great at. Some things you're pretty good at, and you know it right away. I'm sure when you got into your profession, you kind of thought, oh man, I really like this. I'm really good at this. I can do this, and you excelled. Same thing with me in economics. I can remember fourth grade. It's hard to believe, but I had a project. The project was, why did the auto industry locate in Detroit? Back when I was in school, Detroit was the center of the auto industry, and I thought that was the coolest project. And I remember doing all kinds of work, and I can to this day tell you exactly why they located there.
Why?
But that I didn't know what economics was, but that was economics, and I loved it, and I was off and running. And
why? You raise a great question. Why did they go to Detroit?
All the raw materials for producing steel, which was key to the auto industry, was in a few hundred miles of Detroit, and then of course the waterway. You can get you can move stuff to Detroit and ship stuff out of Detroit. It was through the St. Lawrence, waterway. So that was also, very key. And then of course, it's just idiosyncratic, where was Henry Ford, where did he live? And that's a big part of it as well. So yeah. Those are the key reasons.
When you start your day, what's the first thing you consult or what's the first thing you want to know?
Oh, I go immediately to the web and I take a look at what's going on. I get a lot of things pushed to me through emails. So actually the first thing I do is I look at through all my emails and I've got 200 economists that report to me, from all over the world. So I'm getting emails from all over the place all night. And so when I wake up, I probably have, 35, 40, 45 emails. So I take a look at those very quickly, see if there's anything, important going on, both in terms of the economy, but also in terms of, what's going on with my folks. And then I immediately turn online and I, just see what's going on. And I, go to the major news sources. I look at Fox, CNBC, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, FT, of course, the Washington Post. So I go immediately there. So that's where I look.
Maybe I can put a finer point on the question. And final question for you.
Sure.
Is there a certain data point that Mark Zandi wakes up every day and says, I need to know what's happening there?
Well, the 10-year Treasury yield is kind of my benchmark statistic. I mean, that is generally a pure read on what's going on economically. And you can tell a lot about the world, from that one statistic. And, the stock market goes up and down for lots of different reasons, but generally bond yields go up and down for only one reason, and that goes back to the economy.
Uh-huh. When you see the Treasury yield at 1.5 or 1.9, I think it's been at 1.6 this week. I'm sorry, Mark, but help me understand what you see in that number that tells you how that reflects the economy and in which direction we're going.
Okay, so today we're at, 1.67. It's up one percentage point, a little more from where we were a year ago. That's progress. We're moving in the right direction. But normal, typical, would be 3.5%. So we are, off bottom. We're moving in the right direction, but we've got a long way to go before we're back to anything I would consider to be normal.
I'm going to start doing that. Thanks for the tip. I hear the dog in the distant background. Tell your dog.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
No,
I'm sorry.
It's all cool. You're living. You're a human being. You're at home. It's still somewhat COVID times. By the way, this conversation's happening at noon on a Thursday, May 13th, Mark. And I point that out because I'm not quite sure when people are going to listen to it. But when they do, conditions could change between now and then. So thank you so much for your time. I've learned a lot.
Well, both, thanks for the opportunity. I really do appreciate that.
You bet. Maybe we check in 6 months and see where we are and where we're headed then, Mark. Thank you so much. Have a terrific weekend.
Take care now.
Mark Zandi, Chief Economist, Moody's Analytics. I'm Bill Hemmer. This is Hemmer Time.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.